Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to Sex, Psychics, and Psychedelics, Discovering Inner Liberation. My name is Banana Jane Garnett. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, a lover of freedom, and a relentless explorer of the mind. Please come join me on my journey in hot pursuit of inner illumination and liberation. For more about me, you can find me at The Banana Jane on Instagram. Now let's dive in.
Miriam Elise is a sexual healer and a tantra teacher who helps women wake up to the much-needed medicine of pleasure. Speaking of which, it is my genuinely great delight to get to know and share a woman who makes it her business to increase the pleasure in the world. I present, dear listeners, Miriam Elise. I'm excited about talking to you because, well, for a number of reasons, but the pleasure as medicine refrain has really stayed in my head, as has what we discussed when we connected a little bit earlier, which was this idea of taking a journey, both us, for ourselves, but also for the listener, from pleasure as a drug to pleasure as medicine. And yeah, so I'd love to kind of look at those two things with you and explore them, and we can do whatever else we want as well. So
great. Thanks for reminding me about what I was about
the other day. Yeah. I don't know if that still resonates for you.
It does. I've actually been doing, I've been writing an article and talking about Wilhelm Reich and Napoleon Hill and how they related to sex and pleasure. And it speaks right to this. Yes, it still resonates for me. And I was writing today about something that I'm inspired to share. So, yes.
Oh, let's hear it. Should we just go straight in? Obviously, I'll be introducing you, but is there anything that we should know about you in terms of your journey into this work?
Yeah, so my journey into this work is maybe different than a lot of women who are looking for sexual healing. For me, I've been a meditator and a yogi since young, maybe 14 or 15, and sexual energy was something I've always had a lot of, and I kind of sensed early on that this energy was powerful, and it kind of felt like the superpower living in my body. And the only way that I was taught about sex was it's for procreation, don't get pregnant, don't get STDs. I was never taught about it being for anything but procreation and, you know, obviously pleasure, but that was a no-no, right?
Right. So when you said you had a lot of sexual energy, do you mean like you had appetite to be sexual with people?
Appetite, yes. And, when I was so young, it wasn't directly an appetite to be sexual with people. It was just this arousal energy that I didn't really have anything to do with. I was so active. I played soccer. I was hyper. I was creative, painting all the time, like making things out of clay. Like I had so much of this. When I say sexual energy, I mean life force energy.
Right. Creative energy.
Creative energy. And right around the time when I was in puberty, it kind of turned into more directly sexual energy, but I recognize it as being the same thing.
Yeah.
So,
oh, you did at the time. I mean, I do now, but I did you at the time feel that it was all part of the same thing?
Now I can see that.
Yeah.
Then I was just being tossed about by my own energies and didn't really know. But now I'm like, oh, there wasn't a break in the continuation between that energy. It just transformed into arousal and curiosity and desire to, you know, play and experiment. But, you know, especially as a woman, we're taught that that's not a young woman. We're taught that that's not okay. It's not okay to be sexual, to experiment with multiple different people and to have these desires. In fact, it can be dangerous. And I think there's a good reason why for, you know, preteens and teenagers, it's taught to not explore sexuality. I think it can definitely be like a drug, that when that part of you gets opened too early, it can cause some problems. So this is true with a lot of people who've experienced, you know, rape or sexual trauma or molestation at an early age. It's like the floodgates of the sexual energy get opened too early, and it's more than we have the system to process and deal with.
Wait, I didn't catch that. What do you mean we have the system to process and deal with?
Kind of like our nervous system, and also our mind, the way that we think about ourselves in the world as sexual beings. We're just not matured yet. So I think a lot of this can get internalized as shame and just put in the wrong place. You know, there's something wrong with me. My body is either too much or not enough, you know, and until we get to experience that healthily, in a way that I think our minds and bodies are really mature enough for, it's just too much.
Mm. You know? I mean, maturity seems to apply to, children and adolescents and anyone else, anyone who's starting on a sexual journey. But I was also thinking about whether we're ever reaching sort of sexual maturity. I imagine you have more of it than most people, but I feel like, you know, collectively we haven't found sexual maturity. And I wonder if it's part of the nature of sex that it has this difficult sort of there's something difficult in the nature of it. Like, I wonder if it's like fire, you know, where it's just like it can burn you and that's the deal. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even more so, speaking specifically about very young, meaning before puberty, prepubescent humans, children are very open energetically. They are open. They are influenceable. They're naive. They should be. That's what it takes to be teachable and to learn, is to be open in the mind, open hearted, open in your body. Everything, you're receiving all this input. And there's a certain element that we have to learn how to hold ourselves, how to hold boundaries with our own energy and with other people's energy. We have to know ourselves enough to understand ourselves as sexual beings before it's, especially, I mean, I'm speaking of experiencing our sexuality with other people. If it's about exploring yourself, I think that's fine for children.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think, I don't know how I'm understanding this, is it's easy when you have sexual appetites, it's easy to, especially as a female, I feel like it's easy to draw in a certain kind of sexual attention and then to actually become over-sexualized. I don't know, I feel like that's a quite easy place to also get stuck.
For men too, you know, like... Mm. Men are taught one thing about who they should be in relationship with their bodies and their sexuality and with women or whatever sex they're attracted to. And women are taught that they should be a certain way. And for some men and some women, that is perfect because that's naturally how they would normally express themselves. But I think it's a pretty small sliver of people, say a small sliver of women, who actually feel the way that we teach women to express her sexuality, like femininity, is a very small portion of, if I was naturally just expressing myself, how would that look? How would that feel to you? We're taught being feminine looks a very particular way. We're taught being masculine with, you know, sexual energy looks a very particular way. But the truth is, most people are on this spectrum and range, and different sexual experiences, different partners might bring out a different part of you. Mm. So I think sexual maturity, to bring it back to that part, has a lot to do with your ability to be in touch with your true expression of yourself through your sexual energy.
To be in touch with your true expression of your true self in your sexual energy. And I imagine that means also being able to communicate that with, so sort of knowing who you are, but also knowing how to potentially share that with a partner.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it, right? Is that when we communicate it, it's like we learn more about who we are when who we are is reflected off of somebody else.
Mm, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like that's where it gets quite sticky, particularly in early sexual experiences, which are then also quite formative, right? When I think most of us remember our first sexual experiences. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to kind of pick up beliefs about how things go down based on, you know, a couple of early experiences, and also based on the kind of default experiences that can happen when you don't say, actually, this doesn't feel good, because you don't want to hurt the person's feelings, or because what you're experiencing doesn't look like the porn you saw, where the woman was, you know, throwing back her head in such a way and making such noises. And, you know, or maybe it's part of the power trip of early sex, is that you learn to copy what you've seen and, you know, raise the bar. I mean, I think it would be remiss to, I mean, how can we expect young people not to be copying what they're seeing? And, you know, and how can we expect people coming into their sexuality not to be performing on some level? Because performance is armor, performance is fun, performance gets you in the door. And yet performance, it seems in general, maybe for some people it is, but I would feel like in general, it's not the goal. I would say in general, you know, ultimately we want to connect to one another.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, the sexual maturity thing comes in, is performative sex, or doing it in a way that you feel like this is what it should look like. This is what my partner wants to see. This is how I'm going to choose to express myself, which basically means you're controlling yourself and controlling this wild primal expression to the extent that it can only look like this.
Mm-hmm.
Women are taught that their orgasmic sounds should sound a certain way, that their bodies should look a certain way. And we kind of contort ourselves. I mean, some people, some cultures more than others, we contort ourselves to try to appear a certain way. And what that does is it denies the truth of that primal essence of who we are. And we become separated from even feeling our desires, from feeling our pleasure, because we're telling ourselves that, no, that's not what they want. That's not what people want to see. That's not okay. I need to look like this in order for, you know, that deep part of me or that pleasure inside me to be accepted.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite a predicament. So what are you seeing in general? Who comes to see you? Who are your clients in general?
Most of my clients are women. Mm-hmm. And women who have a hard time getting in touch with their desire, or feeling, women who've had trauma, women who are in relationships and don't want sex and their partner does, and they want to learn how to want sex again. Or women, there are some women that I work with who, you know, have maybe normal desire, whatever normal is, but want to learn how to work with it more, just like what I wanted when I started studying Tantra. Like, this is amazing. Sex is amazing. I know there's something other than what I've been experiencing. Mm-hmm. And that, I love working in that capacity, because it's kind of like taking it to the next level.
Right. And so tell me about your Tantra journey and the more that you found. If you could also give us your sort of a working definition of Tantra for the listener who might not have come across it before.
Sure. Tantra has so many definitions, and you can find 10 different ones just by doing a Google search on it. But I consider Tantra to be a system of attaining enlightenment, essentially. In India, that's what it was originally intended for. Just like yoga, Tantra is a methodology, a series of practices that refine your energetic system, refine who you are mentally, physically, energetically, so that you can be a clear vessel for God to move through. So that's like the kind of spiritual approach of Tantra. Tantra does not disclude sexuality in its quest for God. Tantra teaches that you don't have to die before having a meeting with God. In fact, part of the aim is to weave Tantra. One of the definitions is Tantra means to weave together, right? Masculine, feminine, day and night, dark and light, good and bad, fire and water, any two opposites, weaving them together and understanding what happens when two opposites become one.
Oh, that's right? Beautiful. Thank you for that. I hadn't gotten that bit of it. I think to me, I was like, Tantra is spirituality and sex. two of my favorite things. Yeah, why have I never done it yet? You know, like I've got it. I will have a tantra journey. I am determined, but I just haven't. I guess I've had little snippets in my own way, but I haven't like fully embraced that. And not quite sure why, but.
Well, the thing that I think people are confused about is that tantric sex has to look a certain way, or tantra is a very particular thing. It's not. Like, to me, it's just letting yourself fill your body more fully, letting your essence, letting your whoever that is, whatever that is, getting yourself out of the way so that you can allow your power to come through.
Right. It sounds like you're talking about, you know, sex with less ego.
Exactly.
Ooh, interesting.
It's very not interesting. Power, it's spirit power, right?
Yeah, and I guess that brings us back. Well, I want to hear about the tantra. I'm not going to let you off the hook because I want to hear about your tantra journey. The sexy bit of the tantra journey. No, but yeah, I think that the back to pleasure as medicine, that seems to be about allowing a kind of spiritual or bigger kind of notion of pleasure to enter the picture, and less the kind of egoic, I'm going to consume this, I'm going to get this, I'm going to check this box off the list kind of a pleasure. So, yeah, but you tell me.
Well, I like, yes, this conversation is very fun. That's okay. why I made it the thing that I do, because I could talk about sex and pleasure all day. But so let's scale back for a moment and look at that. What I just felt coming through you when you said that, like, I want to consume this. I want to check this off my box. I want to own that. Right.
Yeah.
Even that. Yes. Okay. Objectively, yes, that could be seen as maybe the dark side or the greedy side or the ego side of sexuality. Within that desire to consume, within that desire to just ravish and that lust and that passion, within that there is also God in a pathway to the divine, but even within that kind of darker side.
Oh, I like that. I like that because it's de-shaming as well.
Exactly. Mm. And it's about taking the shame and the dark stigma around sexuality off of it, saying, well, where is there actually an opportunity for me to feel more of myself through this expression?
Yes. I love this because, yeah, I think, you know, where we really want can be the darkest place within ourselves. It's often, this is me as a psychologist talking, what I've observed in myself and in other people, but where we really want is often where we feel most vulnerable and most ashamed, because that's you could look at it as developmental trauma, or, you know, that something that you weren't giving that you're still trying to get in life. Mm-hmm. Or you could see it, you know, from a more sort of spiritual perspective as your path or your dharma, you know, the thing that is kind of in your way. You might perceive it to be in your way, you know, like I have this fetish, I have this deep dark desire, I have this addiction, I have this want that can never be met, maybe by another person or in a way that feels more kind of socially acceptable. And I think that if and when we can meet ourselves in those places with love and curiosity, like, oh, there's some part of me that is feels like a hunter, like wants, and then on the other hand, maybe feels like, you know, the hunted, the victim, like the part that, you know, something more pathetic, like I didn't get this thing, but I still want it. I feel like those are the really kind of tight spaces inside of us that can be hard to get to. And I guess if we look at what we're really interested in sexually, not what we would show the world that we're into sexually, or what we feel like we should be into sexually, but what really are we into sexually? And I think that changes. I mean, certainly for me, I find that changes and I watch it change and evolve, and it's interesting. What really turns me on right now, I feel like that gives us so much information about where we are in life and what we need to cultivate, perhaps even just an acceptance of.
I like that. And as you're speaking, I want to bring it back to something that you said made me think of this. So doing something, acting out in a certain way sexually, for one person can be repeating a trauma or kind of driving in deeper this toxic, if you will, expression of sexuality. For another person, that's doing those same things could actually be liberating and healing.
Can we get into an example? I don't know if you've got something, because this could, I'd like to get sort of granular with this.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. For example, being tied up.
Okay, great.
Right. So for some people, coming at bondage from the perspective of self-hatred, inability to feel free sexually. So you need to feel so constricted in order to feel anything at all, because you're so numb that being tied up lets you feel finally safe enough to feel anything. Some people like bondage for that reason. Not that it's wrong. It's still giving them an experience they need. Mm-hmm. But the other way to come to bondage too is from this perspective, like I can sense that the experience of being tied up is going to create a lot of resistance in me. That resistance is both terrifying and exciting. And I want to know myself better through understanding how I respond, how I react when I'm tied up, what is going to come alive in me. If it becomes a loop to where you need something in order to feel release, then it's a trap. If it's something that you're doing to explore yourself and to say, what other sides of myself have I yet to explore? I know that I need to be in control all the time, for example. I think being tied up could be really good medicine for me. So I'm going to give myself that experience because I'm terrified of it.
Right. Well, that's quite an evolved person who creates those kind of experiences for themselves. But I like it. I like that idea. I'm thinking also about that, the interpersonal part of this, which I think is another way of looking at what you're saying, which is how can we kind of add more consciousness to these experiences, or drink in more consciousness from these experiences. Mm-hmm. That are already kind of laden with potential. Sex is laden with sort of learning potential. I also wonder about the sort of the power of being seen. So if we're talking about de-shaming, if there's something that I really want, if you and I are in partnership and there's something that I really want, I could either hide it from you. I could say, okay, so I'm ashamed of it. I want it. I could either hide it from you, or I could kind of try and control it another way so that, like, I'm setting it up so that you give it to me. You know, I'm trying to, like, hook the whole thing up so that you give it to me. I've never done that before, by the way, in a relationship. Just kidding. I feel like there's another way, which is that I would talk to you about it. Say, hey, I really want this thing, but there's part of me that's feeling weird about it. And that you, I know this is all rather sort of ideal, but that you go, okay, let's try it, but we're not going to just do it exactly the way that, you know, according to your script, but maybe we're going to go a bit slower. Maybe we're going to check in with each other as we do it.
Are you talking about like a fantasy?
Yeah, I'm talking about a fantasy because I think that it could be it could be any kind of scenario that you get, you know, sort of stuck on. So it could be a particular kind of bondage fantasy, for example, if we're going with that, right? Because I think that people learn like a sort of a routine that works,
right?
This certainly happens in marriages, right, where you're like, you do this to me, then I do that to you, and then we both get to do this together. Mm-hmm. And then we're done. And you know, so like, how can we kind of, or it could be something, you know, sort of, yeah, a particular kind of piece of kink. I'm thinking about somebody telling me about this in their relationship, that they were, you know, very, very hooked on certain kinds of kink and bondage. And finally, they found this partner where they could slow the whole process down enough and add enough communication that the whole thing became not just this sexy thing where they got to reach these climaxes, but a very profoundly intimate and connecting and healing process.
Mm-hmm. Is this a question?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at that process of how to add or create more consciousness within the sexual experience and sharing what I understand of it so that you can either, you know, grow my understanding or tell me what you think.
Yeah. So a few things are coming up. One is there's two ways to open. You can mm-hmm. open outward or you can open inward.
Okay.
Something I love about the tantric experience of sexuality is it's really about opening inward.
Oh, okay.
That means becoming more sensitive in your senses, all of your senses, your touch, what you're smelling, what you're seeing. And you'll notice the more clean you are. So after I've done a cleanse, for example, if I'm really healthy, if I'm exercising a lot, if I've just done a cleanse or a juice fast, I am so sensitive to smells, to light, to beauty, like everything just impacts me more. As we get older, as we're in the same relationship, as we're used to doing the same things, we get less sensitive to the things that used to bring us a lot of pleasure and joy. So the journey for a lot of people becomes trying to seek outward for other kinky things they can do. That's great also, but you're going to actually experience a lot more pleasure from any other kinky thing you try or just regular sex if you learn to open inward. And what that means is it's really that this spiritual approach to sexuality is the beginner's mind. So if you can use it as a meditation, especially the part before the more intense penetrative sex, if that's what you're going towards. I'm not going to call it foreplay because I think foreplay is something that should be happening all the time.
Yeah.
But the leading up to part, if you can stay with your partner and stay with yourself in a way that you're just curious and open and exploring and not going through the motions, but just letting it be kind of a dance and a movement and creative, letting that part actually feel creative, right? This awakens a different part of your sexual energy. And it awakens this kind of curiosity to explore and to feel more where before you might have just kind of skated over a certain part of the experience. Pausing when you feel your partner's breath on your neck and letting that sensation like shivers down your spine and just being with that tingle for a while and breathing with it and letting your partner witness your pleasure from little tiny touches so that they become more aware of how they're impacting you. And they learn to derive pleasure from your sensitivity to subtlety, you know, and over time in partnership, this can develop into like an amazing kind of tantric touch and play relationship where there's so much sensation and so much excitement and curiosity and exploring just like breath and touch that it's this whole world of its own to the point where penetrative sex can be the cherry on top and might not even be the most exciting part of the whole thing.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Thank you. That's great. I feel like I'm beginning to understand it more from what you're saying as a kind of more of a internal process that has to do with your relationship with yourself and your own body and your own experience. And in terms of the communication part of it, are you encouraging just to stay inside your own experience and not necessarily put it into words? Just slowing down? Yeah.
Words help, but words also take you out of the primal feeling body. One of the beautiful things about trying new things and kink and dressing up and ropes and whatever, candle wax and whatever, sensation play, whatever you decide to do, is that it takes you out of the default reactionary sexual script that you're used to running. It's something new. It shakes you up enough to where you're trying something different. So automatically you have to be curious. It's kind of forcing you into this curious state. It's possible to get that same feeling of newness by, you know, being curious in different ways. But communicating is essential to, I think, a good relationship, obviously, and essential to exploring different aspects of your sexuality. Some partners are just going to get it. They're just going to meet you where you're at. They're going to be able to sense and move with you and respond. Mm. And that's maybe a smaller sliver of the population. other partners, you're going to have to say, I want, maybe even in the moment, in as few words as possible, because pleasure state is a trance state, which is a right brain state, which is not about linear thinking. It's not about perfect grammar and correct sentences. It's about maybe single words, colors, senses. So even if it's like, I want you to slow down and listen, you know, and if the guy or the person you're with says, oh, what do you mean by that? It's going to switch you into the left brain where you're like, okay, let me try to explain myself. Meanwhile, my pleasure is floating away. So it might be good to have this right before this conversation, right before sexuality, when you're like, if you're saying, you know, I want you to watch how my body is capable of responding to the slightest touch. And, you know, maybe let's try to take 20 minutes before you even touch my breasts or my genitals. Let's just try to touch everywhere else and let's just play with this for a while. And even communicating like that is an invitation to a different experience. The problem sometimes is, and I'm not saying for all men, I feel like I've gotten in trouble before by categorizing like masculine and feminine.
Yeah.
But often enough, men like to know what they're doing, and they like to be perceived as knowing what to do and being in charge and being in control. And that can be really hot. If a man doesn't know what he's doing, it kind of puts him into this more receptive state where he's open to being led, but also might not know how to hold that same masculinity. So I like to say that there's the more control in surrendering to a partner who's willing to listen than there is in being dominant.
Okay, you're gonna have to say that again because I think it's good, but it's a very long, complicated sentence for my poor brain.
So if you're with a partner who knows how to respond to you, and you're playing the feminine role, right? You're receiving touch, you're receiving sensation. If they know how to listen to your body, then everything they do to you is going to be reflected in how you breathe and how you move and the sounds you make. They are following your lead, even though you're the one who's in surrender. So people think dominance and submission is a certain way. But really, especially in the BDSM world, a good dom is following every response that the sub gives. Every response is going to lead the dom to what to do next.
The sub is the river. That's where the pleasure energy is going, and the dom has to follow.
Yes, and part of being a woman, being in a woman's body, and I think a lot of women, especially the feminist type of women, are uncomfortable with the idea that we should be submissive to men, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's freedom, immense freedom, in recognizing the power in your own surrender.
I totally agree with you, and I've always, and I think this is because I'm a total nature lover, and I think I've always kind of worshipped the feminine on that level because I think of nature that way. I think of earth that way. So I think I've always sort of been tuned into the feminine in a very particular way, and what I'm noticing now that both makes me sad and I know is really necessary is I see this and feel this big wave of rage, and that we're in an era now where the aspects of the dark feminine are coming forwards. There's this a lot of anger, and we're understandably, you know, it's post Me Too, but the anger goes back a very long way, and it's part of the feminine expression. But it's also easy to get locked in it, like any kind of aggression. It's easy for it to turn into war rather than be just yet another kind of fluid expression of, you know, of pure feeling, that needs to be released. So, I'm wondering about that. I mean, I wonder about the rage that needs to be released, and I feel like, yeah, so there's the rage that needs to be released, and then there's this softening that feels like it needs to happen, this sort of softening and slowing down. And this goes beyond, I think, men, women. I think it's people, you know. Can we soften and slow down enough to be unguarded enough to be very real with ourselves and very real with our pleasure. Mm-hmm. So I know there's a lot in that, but, you know.
Yeah, and the thing, there is your freedom, your liberation lies on the other side of everything you do to protect yourself. So anger is a way of protecting ourselves from being hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be a lot of things, but that's one example. And just like I was, you know, talking about different kinks people have, they can become addictions. You can feel addicted to being powerful.
Yeah.
But if you want liberation, if you want to feel free, you have to go beyond what you know how to do. Mm-hmm. You have to go into the place of the unknown, into the place of surrender. And that freedom isn't ego power, it's God power.
Yes, I love that. God power. Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
Getting beyond our own preferences even, and learning to, you know, the idea of orgasm, making it bigger than this little linear chart. We've all seen the charts of what male orgasm looks like, right? Peak and then a dip.
Yeah.
Female orgasm, and not just for women, men can have this too. It's the feminine way of experiencing pleasure, is these waves. And in order to experience those waves, it's just like, it's a metaphor for life, right? We don't want to hold on to the things that are good because everything changes, the only constant. So getting really good at expansion and contraction, expanding and contraction. And that's a very tantric thing also, like being graceful in the liminal spaces and the in-between spaces. And knowing how to receive sensation and receive pleasure, not trying to reach a goal, but trying to, how can I let this experience be as big as it can possibly be? Right? And it might look like pain sometimes. It might look like tears. It might look like shaking. It might look like climax. It could look like so many different things. But I think really letting yourself evolve through the experience of pleasure and sex and sensuality is what can make pleasure a medicine.
Yeah, I appreciate that, that description. It sounds so good, the whole thing. Okay, can we look at, if I was your client, what would we do? Like, if I came to you and I said, okay, My goal is just more pleasure and liberation. I mean, we'll just throw that in for good measure. How would we work together? How would the whole thing work?
I mean, you know, it's always said that the brain is the biggest sex organ. So it always comes with first understanding what is in the way of your pleasure and liberation.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that oftentimes the most powerful women are the ones who feel the most locked up inside, because they've done so much to deny parts of themselves in order to be powerful or successful.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And this is going to sound really boring, but fuck it. It's, you know, at least in part true. And if I said to you, you know, a lot of what feels like it's in my way is just the routines of busyness that have, you know, been established over time, being a mom, being a therapist, somebody with lots of projects they're, you know, interested in. And I mean, I think in some ways that's where my sexual energy is now, really, is in ideas and in creation. It's, you know, it feels like it's more exciting to me even than thinking about sex, which is something I've always loved to think about. And, you know, I'm trying to put it all on the same page. But yeah, I do think that some of what's in the way of having a more kind of more engagement with sex is, you know, the time of life I'm in where it's damn busy and being a mom. And I'm just wondering if you have any fixes for that.
I mean, yeah. So what I hear you saying to me is that your sexual energy is being well used in this area of your life.
Well, that's a nice, generous reframe. I appreciate that. Yeah, yeah.
What I'm also hearing is there's a desire for more. There's a desire to feel your sexual energy outside of the context of your day-to-day responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So then to cultivation.
Sorry, say that last bit again.
Cultivation.
But what was before the cultivation?
Then we come to cultivation.
Oh, then we come to cultivation. Okay, yes. Then we come. Okay, here we are at cultivation. Okay. Tell me more.
So, you know, maybe at certain times in our lives, sexual energy was bubbling over. We had more than enough.
Mm.
Or maybe less responsibilities. So less, you know, places where it was being allocated. I hear so many mothers talk about how their needs for intimacy are taken by caring for their children, just touching them, hugging them. It's like you have that skin to skin need met. What isn't met is your development as a primal, wild and free, pleasurous woman. Yeah. And in order to have the motivation to feel more of that, cultivating primal sexual energy is really important. How do we do that? So in the tantric system, tantra yoga, kundalini yoga, there's something known as kundalini energy, which is a very real thing. Let me just say this to all the skeptics out there. Kundalini energy is, it's your life force energy, and it lives in your body, but it's dormant for most of us. And most of us, it stays dormant. Most of it stays dormant, but it's used for any time that we need a burst of energy. That kundalini energy is used.
It's like automatically used. Is that what you mean? Almost like the adrenals kind of go into overdrive?
Similar, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so there's many ways to wake that up. Some are safe, some are unsafe. But doing practices, like one of my favorite cultivation practices is different breathing practices, but using the yoni egg or the jade egg, along with breathing practices and pulsating, squeezing and releasing those PC muscles or the pelvic floor muscles.
Okay, so I'm going to, again, just do a clarification. A yoni egg, as I know it, is a small, like smaller than a regular egg, like a tiny bird's egg kind of shape. And it's made out of marble, I think, or jade, I guess. It's a jade egg. It's made out of jade. I have heard that they sell weird ones on the internet and you need to get a proper jade one. Is that right? Anyway, and you insert it vaginally. Is that right? But not all the way up, and then, do exercises around it. This is my layman's understanding. You're here to refine, Miriam.
I will clarify for you and for your buddy.
Okay.
So the yoni egg can range in size anywhere. Yeah. Very small egg to maybe the size of a regular chicken's egg. There's different sizes for different people. Also, the smaller ones are considered more advanced because it's harder to feel the smaller ones. They are sometimes made of jade. They're also made of, you know, quartz, rose quartz, black obsidian. There's a number of different materials that are acceptable to use. Non-porous gemstones are great. They're inserted vaginally, and you might insert it a little bit, but the point is to squeeze, contract your vaginal muscles around it so that it does sit deeper inside of you. You can use a string, wrap it around the little hole drilled in it to pull it out if in case you're afraid of losing it. But basically, these eggs, when you specifically can tone the muscles of your pelvic floor and of your vagina, help bring more blood flow and more sensation to the area. And if you're using the egg, you don't just put it in you. I mean, you can, for example, rose quartz has great healing energy. If you need to heal that energy, you just meditate with a rose quartz egg inside of you. It's lovely. But you can also practice this kind of pulsation of these PC muscles, squeeze, release. Imagine that you're lifting the egg and dropping the egg. And part of this is actual like strengthening and flexibility, not just tightening, but loosening, strengthening, and creating more of an ability to have more dexterity with those muscles, more control. And part of it is wiring your brain to your vagina. Like, we don't think of our body below our waist most of the time. We don't think about, except when we have to pee maybe, or maybe when we're having sex, we think of that area. But creating more of a relationship with our own sex organs so that we're consciously using those muscles. And this brings more blood flow. It can bring in more sensation during sex. I once worked with a 55-year-old woman who had never had an internal orgasm. She was working with the yoni egg daily for 2 weeks. The next time she had sex, she had an internal orgasm. So I'm not claiming anything, but I'm just saying it's hard to not see the connection there.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. Thank you for clarifying what a yoni egg actually is and how to use it. Yeah. I'm sure I've been told it before, but I think not in a way that is so lucid. Maybe I wasn't ready to hear it. Who knows? I don't know. Okay, so you, that would be, yeah. So kundalini energy. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I want to speak to this energy that lives inside of all of us. It's a very real thing. waking it up by bringing more electricity, essentially, bringing more awareness, bringing more sensation, bringing more energy to this area of the vagina, the pelvic floor, is actually helping wake up this Kundalini energy. That energy can be used for anything. It's right down here by the sex organ. So one of the first things it gets used for is sex, especially when we're younger. That's when we're in our highest kind of procreation phase. The body wants to make babies, and that is just on fire. When we learn to control and connect that energy to our higher centers, it can actually become more of a spiritual path where we're using this arousal energy to meditate with. You know, we're using your arousal to focus on a creative project you have. And that comes from some of these practices to actually lift this energy up out of the sex organs. And some, you know, traditional tantrics might say that the only way to do this is to be celibate. But one thing that I love about the path that I'm on with Tantra, the red path, is can you be tantric and cultivate this energy and also have a normal life and live in this world and have a partner and enjoy sex?
Okay, I'm intrigued. The red path.
Yes.
What is the red path?
So red versus white. White Tantra is kind of more about ascension and using the energy and maybe being celibate with it, using it for breath work and kind of letting it rise. The red path, as far as I'm aware, is about cultivating the energy in the lower three centers. So I talk a lot about the chakras and how they relate to the connection between your mind and body. The lower three centers are, you know, money, power, sex, basically. That's most of humanity is living in money, power, sex.
So I actually brought in my red chakra ball. I don't know if you can see that. I put it behind me, filled with roses, especially for you.
Perfect. Thank you. I love
you. You're welcome.
Yeah. So if we're overly identified with our egos, if we're overly identified with money or with power or our sexuality, it traps us in a limited experience of our humanity. The red tantric path is a large part of it is learning how to work with the energy of our own ego, of our own power, of our own sexuality in order to get beyond it. So the idea is that we're not denying ourselves. If we deny ourselves, it causes either repression or obsession. So if you don't repress or obsess, then you just have this energy to work with. You're not afraid of it. You're not hiding it. You're not ashamed of it.
Yeah, that just brought this thought online. Sorry to bring rage back into the picture. It seems to be on my mind, but, you know, of the relationship between rage and want. And maybe rage is something that accrues from not being able to connect with wants.
You mean desires?
Desires. Yeah, that's what I mean. Exactly.
Definitely. I think if desires were met, the rage wouldn't be there. If you feel feel bad for having a desire, the rage can show up almost like a tantrum.
I was just thinking, right? That's the two-year-old, isn't it? Like, I want it.
Why can't I have it? I should be able to have it. I deserve it. You know, but rage, anger is a tool, you know, anger is a tool that can show you where you have been out of alignment with yourself. If you're in a relationship and the relationship isn't giving you what you need and what you want, you might get really angry because you're out of alignment with who you really are.
Meaning you're in the wrong place? If you're...
Meaning you're allowing something that doesn't actually meet you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you're not serving your fulfillment. You're not serving your potential. You're serving what you're doing to stay safe, which makes you full of rage after a certain point. And other people just numb and have addictions to make them comfortable when they're being undermet. Most people.
Yeah. So I guess we all have want. We all have desire that's encoded in us, and it's. I guess it's a sort of how do we relate to it? And it sounds like in white tantra, you're getting to rise above it. And in red, it sounds like you're meeting it. I think that sounds really, a really interesting. It's like you meet it in order to transcend. I suppose it's sort of paradoxical.
Well, similar to what we were talking about around the way of being with sex, you know, that lusty energy. If I go all the way into the center of my lust, if I go all the way into the center of my rage, I will find God there. But it's about a lot of the stickiness, if you will, or the tension or the uncomfortableness about rage is because there's a part of ourselves that's still resisting expressing that. If we're, and it's not always safe to express it, I'm not telling people to go out and just rage, but if you're in a safe environment to do so, if you let yourself purely, like pure expression, just pure white light coming through you in the form of rage, it will eventually balance itself out to neutrality where you feel, ah,
yeah. Yeah. I had a friend who had I thought it was a great idea. She said the world wasn't ready for it yet, but she was going to start rage palaces. She called them rage palaces, places where people could come to sort of safely express and release their rage. Maybe that will still happen. But
interesting, because I think like female orgasm can look a lot like rage sometimes.
Ah.
Especially if the sexual energy is, there's tightness around it, like repression or withholding, the orgasm can feel angry or almost helpless, or there's this like angst, trauma that can come through. And that's one reason why orgasm can be so healing, because it lets us express and kind of let a little steam off, if you will.
Exactly. I always love that feeling of, oh, here's all this emotion, but it sort of without the why, like, why was I crying just now? Why am I crying? Why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? No fucking idea. It doesn't matter. It's just an explosion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good to have places we can explode or melt.
Yeah, and I see that is what Tantra is. Tantra is expressing and being okay with expressing the full rainbow of human experience. And I could get esoteric with that, but I mean, every aspect of who you are, learning it, contacting it, and then learning how to express it. And that makes you a whole human being. It makes you well-rounded. As long as there's things inside of ourselves that we're at odds with, it's going to come out in some kind of way, oftentimes passive aggressive or depression or anxiety, or there's going to be something that's like, ugh. And almost all of us have that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's degrees. How at odds with yourself are you? You strike me as someone who is not at odds with herself. There's a real cohesion in you, a stillness. Congratulations on all the hard work getting there. I'm sure it's
a lifelong journey.
Sure, it's a journey, yeah.
I've come a long way, and it's interesting. I think on any spiritual path, especially a path that deals with sexuality and deals with rage and deals with ego, it's never ending, and every layer deeper you go, it's revealed twice that much depth beneath it, and it becomes joyful to experience my own resistance. Even becomes a joy, because I'm like, yay, like more opportunities to grow. But we have to make sure that growth also doesn't become kind of a means to an end, because I'm not here seeking enlightenment. I'm not here trying to become a perfect being. I'm thrilled by the experience of living. And I think that's the best way that I can be in humility while exploring myself around this journey, is just like, show me more. What else is there? Like, I'm not trying to withhold myself. I'm not trying to be on a pedestal. I just want to feel it all.
You're an explorer.
Yes.
Yes. amazing. So is there anything else? This has been so wonderful, by the way. Thank you. Really, thank you. It's really fun. And I just want to know if there's anything else you would like to share, or anything about sort of where you're going on this journey, or big dreams, any messages, anything else?
All of it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of my passion recently in this has been recognizing my own withholding, the way that I felt that I had to withhold my true self growing up in a woman body. Aspects of myself I felt like weren't okay. And the anger that I have around trying to be something for men. you know, and this is self-created. Sure, men maybe expect something because that's how it is, but I'm not mad at men. I am angry with the ways that I've chosen to try to be something that I thought men needed me to be. And so for me, a lot of this journey is reclaiming what is essential to me, and that is essence. Essence is essential. And when I work with people, you know, doing coaching, I usually do like a package, a series of sessions online, and it's an exploration of what is your essence, what is essential to you, what's in the way of experiencing that, what are the stories and beliefs that you've created around that, and then let's give some practical ways to feel maybe some discomfort, enough discomfort to get beyond what's been holding you back.
Yeah.
The pleasure path, pleasure and comfort are not synonymous. The pleasure path.
Damn, that's where I'm totally stuck, man. You and I are going to have to really roll up our sleeves on this one. Well, I love comfort. Yeah.
The pleasure path is about sensation, and sensation is about feeling more. It's taking the calluses off.
Right. So it's pain as well.
It's everything. And learning to accept yourself and learning to strengthen your nervous system so that you have the capacity to not only feel more, but experience more power moving through you, and knowing how to hold that power in your heart so that it's also safe for other people.
Explain that last bit. Hold it in your heart so it's safe for other people.
So for example, sexual power is very seductive. It's very seductive when I feel my own sexual power, because it can be manipulative if it's held in my ego. Especially being a teacher or a coach in this realm, I could use it to my own advantage.
Yeah.
If in the path of Tantra that I study, I come from the Sri Vidya lineage, which is goddess worship, which doesn't necessarily meaning worship women or worshiping deities or statues. It means worshiping the feminine energy of creation in men, in women, in the universe, which is the energy of desire, the energy of emotion, the energy of what it takes to create life is the feminine. The masculine is consciousness and the witness and the awareness. It's very disembodied. So on the feminine path, we worship everything that moves through the body. And the seduction in that is you learn how to work with your own energy and other people's energies. I never want to use my power against other people. That's the only way that I can stay safe with the power that I'm cultivating. I would not trust myself or any other teacher if they use their power to get something from other people. So part of this path is getting really humble and honest about how you're using your power, where you still need to grow, what you're not seeing, and where you're still trying to hold on to control.
Yeah.
Does that make more sense?
Yeah, it does.
So yeah, I guess that's it in a nutshell. That's what I'm most inspired by. That's this path for me. It's essential for women. If any woman wants to, you know, awaken, sexuality is an essential part of awakening. It's an essential part of knowing ourselves. I think it's impossible to truly know ourselves without knowing our full expression of sexuality. And it's a really worthy endeavor to explore what our range of expression is. It's also very fun.
Yeah, I mean, I really like everything you're saying. And I just, before we end, I want to just ask you, why is this hard for women? I mean, why is it that we should all be reaching for this, no? I mean, obviously, you and I agree on this, but at the same time, you know, all the excuses we put in the way of it as well, of not making it a priority. Do you have a sort of deeper understanding of why that is or what that's about?
Well, I could start with, you know, what religion says about being a good woman and what society says about how women should be with their sexuality. And I think it goes beyond that. I mean, look at history, you know, and how a lot of often in history, this aspect of feminine power has been demonized. And so we internalize that because we don't want to be bad. We don't want to hurt people. So that's why I think the key is to come from the heart always and understanding really what that means. But it's women by nature, we are nurturers. We care for other people. We want to bring people together. We want to be loved and liked. Not all women are like this, but it's a more feminine thing to want acceptance. I feel like the masculine is trained to be more driven and cutthroat and edgy and get ahead no matter what. And that's kind of, and women do that too. It's just a more masculine expression. So the feminine part of us that wants to include and be included kind of tries to soften our edges and make sure we're acceptable to people, make sure that we're likable and lovable. And I think that is great and beautiful, but it can also go against us expressing and exploring who we really are, because there's the fear that what if I'm too edgy, you know? So it's just finding what feels right to you. Not that one path is better than the other. I think saying that being edgy and being outright sexual and full of rage, saying that that's better than somebody who's soft and values like being accepted, there is no right or wrong. We actually need the range of all types of people in the world in order for this world to work.
Yeah. But
this is just exploring like what is in you, what is within you that has.
I agree. It's any of it's okay if you know that you want it and you know that it's yours, that it's not just some version of life you've been cobbling together. That sort of built around a bunch of shoulds. And I think that waking up for that certainly it's been a big part of my own journey, is sort of waking up to what a fucking pleaser I've been on so many levels. I'm just like, oh, it's exhausting, you know, to even think about it, and kind of embarrassing, and also really a really good thing to wake up to, because then like, oh, well, there's, now that I kind of see this, there's also this whole big journey beyond this. And it doesn't have to be either or. It doesn't mean like, now I don't please anyone, fuck everybody. But, you know, there are allowed to be moments of that.
Yes. It's liberating and empowering to decide that you're not going to please anyone today.
Oh, a whole day. Jesus, you're giving me homework already.
Learning. So this is one thing I guess I'll leave us with.
Okay.
Is I talk a lot about boundaries and the importance of cultivating boundaries as you're cultivating your sexual energy as a really important starting point. It is more important to learn how to have boundaries with yourself than it is with other people. So the first thing is to know how to respond when you're not feeling, I don't know if I should do this, and then you do it anyways. That is dangerous. So having the boundary with yourself, where you know how to be a good leader to this part of you that's emerging. You know, it's like as we're meeting parts of ourselves that we haven't known before, we're also having to learn how to be with and modify and have boundaries with this free energy that wants to go, you know, have sex with everybody in the world now, because we're now a sexually awakened woman. It's like understanding the safety and how to still have, like, liberation doesn't mean ultimate freedom. It means being free within a certain container that you've set for yourself.
Inner liberation.
Inner liberation, yeah, in a way that feels right to you.
Mm. I think we've got a lot in common deep down, Miriam.
Go on and on.
Thank you. This is a great exploration. I feel like it's still the tip of the iceberg. It's obviously a really, you know, deep world that you're exploring and sharing with so many women. And thank you. You know, whenever I see you talking on Instagram, I actually want to listen. I know that you're the real deal. You're saying something, and it's valuable. And so thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. I look forward to sharing more with you. And yeah, this is so much fun to talk to you.
Yay! Miriam left me feeling inspired but uncomfortable. I could see that I was personally very interested in a tantra journey and also quite confronted by it. I wanted to call her up and tell her again how very busy I was. And should I really make this much time for pleasure? I mean, there are always so many other things to do, you know? Important things. Serious things. God damn it. Yeah, so I know, as well as many of you know, that we can move our schedules around. We've got these beautiful things called calendars, and we've got another thing called free will, and we've got minds that can change and open, and we've got bodies we can take adventures with. And I suppose it all becomes a matter of priority. And what I'm going to be thinking about is like how honest I'm being with myself when it comes to my priorities and where pleasure is on that map, and what I really do want and what I really don't want. And yeah, I think that, you know, I think that pleasure is a privilege, and it's a privilege that we can hopefully all enjoy to whatever degree we can, or decide to take that journey. And the shaming of pleasure, although absolutely mired in history, is not necessarily founded in more than people being threatened by it. Anyway, massive conversation, so many more potential threads. So let's dive into the next one. Thank you for listening.